This week on Potlatch, Levi Lott interviews Laura Legere in Tulixac, and later, a recipe for smoking fish. Those were the Hudson Bay Eskimos of Canada. Hunting for the Muskox was the name of the selection, thanks to Folkways Records for the use of that selection. Now we hear the first segment of Levi Lott's interview with Laura Legere, an instructor at Kuskokwim Community College.
I am an instructor at Kuskokwim Community College, and I have been employed to fly out to the surrounding villages and be of assistance to the BIA aides who are presently enrolled in courses at Kuskokwim Community College. We're under an extensive program through Title I to prepare the aides in a role that is more helpful and useful to the children and the teachers in the schools rather than the traditional role of just being a paper checker and, putting up bulletin boards and just menial sort of things. The philosophy these days is that the aid in the classroom can be more helpful than just that. So the courses at Kuskokwim Community College are showing the aides how many different things they can do and how they can be of assistance to the teacher and the children. I am going out and visiting with the aides and helping them with any problems that they may have with their classwork or any questions they may have about classroom routine or anything that they may need. I was a teacher in Arizona. I'm from Flagstaff, Arizona. And it's funny, the tundra is so much like the desert in a lot of ways, especially when I'm flying.
I'll tell you of a man, he was a half-breed too. He knew the woods and roamed them, he was an outcast true. The people, they all run him off, he never came around. And when it came to hiding, he sure could not be found. They called him Johnny Half-Breed, and they made it mighty clear. They called him Johnny Half-Breed, half-breeds ain't welcome here. Mongrels ain't invited, and no curs do we allow. So listen, Johnny Half-Breed, get out and get out now. The city that we speak of was named for Galilee. Within a forest ocean, a mighty sea of trees. All around it in the forest, half-breed Johnny rambled round. He knew all about the eagle and where honey could be found. Not a white man nor an Indian, no parents and no land. The trees, they were his teachers, and the animals his clan. He could converse with the otter, and he held forth with the bear. They say he talked to fishes and to birds when they were there. They called him Johnny Half-Breed, and they made it mighty clear. They called him Johnny Half-Breed, half-breeds ain't welcome here. Mongrels ain't invited, and no curs do we allow. So listen, Johnny Half-Breed, get out and get out now. Now in the town we speak of, the new mayor had a child, a girl of 6 or 7, and not uncommon wild. Often she would wander and then return to home, till once a flying squirrel tempted her to roam. She followed half a mile or more until she lost the track. Panic hit her suddenly, she knew of no way back. The forest turned and twisted all about her every way, and all her steps were wrong ones when she got lost that day. They called him Johnny Half-Breed, and they made it mighty clear. They called him Johnny Half-Breed, half-breeds ain't welcome here. Mongrels ain't invited, and no curs do we allow. So listen, Johnny Half-Breed, get out and get out now. When she turned up missing, a mighty search was called. They feared that she was murdered and worried she was mauled. They tramped the woods for miles around and helicopters flew. And when all that was finished, nothing's all they knew. Someone mentioned Johnny and someone was laughed down. Someone spoke of woodcraft and some said that forest clown. Some said, why, he is just a bum, a dirty lost half-breed. But Johnny was their one hope, and they sent for him with speed. They called him Johnny Half-Breed, and they made it mighty clear. They called him Johnny Half-Breed, half-breeds ain't welcome here. Mongrels ain't invited, and no curs do we allow. So listen, Johnny Half-Breed, get out and get out now. Johnny started searching until he tracked the child, carried her in his half-breed arms out of the forest wild. He was hero for a day, they asked him to remain. They said they'd learned their lesson, that all people are the same. Johnny said, you take your handshakes, your sidewalks and your town. Ask for me by the whippoorwill, he'll say where I'll be found. I prefer to talk with wildcats and to hear the wild goose moan. I'm headed back to wilderness, the forest is my home.
Thanks again to Folkways Records for Johnny Halfbreed, sung by Peter Lafarge with Nick Navarro playing the Indian drums. Now this message from the Cooperative Extension Service of the University of Alaska. You hear a lot of messages advising you not to smoke. Here's one on how to smoke. Fish, that is. Smoking fish preserves it without having to freeze it. The Cooperative Extension Agent at Nome, Mary Alice Griffiths, advises that you use the larger fish like Dolly Varden, salmon, lake trout, etc. First, remove the scales, the head, and the internal organs. Then wipe out the body cavity and split the fish along the backbone. Soak the fish in a salt water solution for 18 to 24 hours, then rinse the fish well in clean water, wipe it dry, and smoke it. Different people put different ingredients in their salt water solution. Some add brown sugar, pepper, and bay leaves in these proportions. For each cup of salt, add 1/2 cup of sugar, 2 tablespoons of pepper, and 2 tablespoons crushed bay leaves. Other people add such things as Worcestershire sauce, hot sauce, soy sauce, or corn syrup to their salt solution. You can add green wood to get the right amount of smoke. Smoke the fish until the surface of the flesh becomes dry and golden brown. This operation will take about 8 to 10 hours in a smokehouse temperature of 160 to 180 degrees. If you're in a hurry, you can smoke the fish in 2.5 hours at 210 degrees with little or no smoke, and then you can finish for 1 hour with smoke at temperature ranging from 85 to 180 degrees. Or you can use the very slow method of smoking fish for 6 days at a temperature of 90 degrees. If you'd like directions on how to build a smokehouse, write to Cooperative Extension Service, University of Alaska, 99701. Thanks to Mary Alice Griffiths, and of course, thanks to the Alaska Native people, who passed on their technique to the Cooperative Extension Service.
Bessie was a lovely child from East Tennessee. Now Leroy was an outlaw, hard-eyed me. One day she caught him staring and it chilled her to the bone. She swore she had to see that look on a child of her own. Cause ladies love outlaws like babies love stray dogs. Ladies touch babies like a banker touches gold. Outlaws touch ladies deep down in their soul. Well, Linda, she's a pretty girl. She's blind and built to last. Timmy's a bad old guitar picker running from his past. Now listening to his song, she heard nothing but bad news. Still she made her mind up to get him win or lose. Cause ladies love outlaws like babies love stray dogs. Ladies touch babies like a banker touches gold. Outlaws touch ladies deep down in their soul. Jessica, she liked Cadillac, she liked diamonds for him. Seymour had a reputation as a lady's man. Well, in one night her light of love finally gave the sign. Jessica parked her Cadillac, took her place in line. Cause ladies love outlaws like babies love stray dogs. Ladies touch babies like a banker touches gold. Outlaws touch ladies deep down in their souls. You know, ladies touch babies like a banker touches gold. Outlaws touch ladies any damn words you want to.
Late Ladies Love Outlaws with Tom Rush. We'll hear more of Levi Lott's interview with Laura Legere as soon as we thank KYAK for carrying Potlatch.
There are varying problems depending on where the village is located. For instance, some of the villages that are on the coast, most of the people in the village are taught Yupik as children. So some of the problems and the function of the aid in those kind of villages is different than the aid on the Yukon, where they primarily speak English from when they begin, when the children first begin. So in a place like Eek or Tuksuk Bay, those places, the aid is also an interpreter for primary school children, so that when the children are first learning English, they kind of help out an awful lot. Whereas up on the Yukon, this function isn't as important because the children are taught English. So that's one problem.
What about the cultural difference between the Navajos and the Eskimos up here? You find much difference there?
Very much so. I was teaching in Flagstaff, which is right in the middle of the, well, not in the middle, but a big center like Bethel is for the Navajo Hopi Reservation. The major difference I see up here, and I like it in Alaska much better than I do in Arizona as far as BIA is concerned in the way the people are up here, because in Arizona the Navajo and Hopi are a minority, and the Gusick or white man, of course, is the majority there. It makes a big difference in the way the kids react to education and the situation that they have. In Arizona, the Navajo people live in separate hogans scattered throughout the desert. In the tundra, people live in villages. This makes a difference because in Arizona, they have to take children out of their homes, away from their parents, put them in a dormitory, and it's very bad. It's bad for the parents and the children. And there are a lot of negative things because of that. Up in Alaska, it's really nice to see that the natives are being educated, but they're still with their parents, they're still loved by their own people, and there's a real unit. The whole village is a unit, and it's very good. I hope that if Alaska grows and they build the roads and all of that, that the village will survive and the village spirit will survive. It's a smallness, and where everybody knows everybody, it's like a family unit. That's one of the reasons that I like being up here, because you kind of lose that in the lower 48. People don't know you anymore, you know. There are too many people. Since I have been flying around Alaska, once I get into a village and I meet some people, I'm never a stranger anymore, it seems, you know. At least superficially. I mean, you know. And the other thing, too, is Navajo people will stay away, and they'll look a white man over. They're very suspicious of white men, generally. You know, you can't generalize about people. People are people, you know. But you don't walk out on the reservation to a hogan and expect to be greeted and welcomed in hogan. The people are not like that. And when I walk into a village in Alaska, the Eskimos always smile. You know, and they're always warm and will talk to you and are open with you. But in Arizona, they aren't. The Navajo people will stand off to the side, watch you for a while, and then if they think you're all right, they might come over, you know. It's like that. But, you know, one of the things that's interesting to me now, I don't speak Yupik, of course, and I don't speak Navajo, but I hear a lot of similarities in languages. The sounds I'm sure if you really knew both languages, they're probably not at all alike, you know, in actual content, but the sounds that are made are difficult. When I was in Arizona, I tried very hard to learn some Navajo, and I just had a heck of a time. And the same thing with Yupik. I can't get some of those sounds. There's quite a bit of difference between the people. One thing that is interesting to me when I first got up here, too, was that the Hopi people are short people. And they don't have quite the features that the Eskimo does. The Eskimo is a truly unique features, you know. And I guess each native tribe is. But the Eskimos looked most like Hopis to me, because that's the only Native Americans I had seen were Navajo Hopi. They looked most like Hopis to me, but because of their size, they're short people. But they look much different in the face. But like when I'm 5'7", and when I used to go to a Hopi village, I always felt like a giant. You know, you know, I felt huge. You know. And when I got to Anchorage and there were a lot of Eskimo people there, I felt the same way again, you know. I felt like, boy, I was so big, you know. People thinking that I'm from Arizona, they think, you know, oh, it's hot down there, you know, because everybody thinks of the desert. But I was from Flagstaff, Arizona, and it's 12,000 feet up in the mountains. And I had experienced 20 below before, but not as consistently as here in Alaska. And when I got up here, I was kind of frightened of the you know, the long night and the freezing temperatures, you know. And if you could see the parka I just walked in with, you know, you could tell I was like a big balloon, you know. I must have so much down that the only way I would ever freeze is to stand out there for a long time. And I think now, you know, that's kind of silly. But I didn't know. And the other thing, the only time I've ever felt any fear up here, as far as the weather was concerned, was when that wind whips up and you have the sub-zero temperatures with that wind and the chill factor. Now, that scared me. That was the only time I ever felt really intimidated by the weather. But other than that, I've experienced cold before. The other thing is that the native muklucks are the only snow or cold shoes to have, I think, you know. I tried in Arizona, I tried those darn boots, you know. I tried all sorts of foot gear, and they're just totally inadequate. And the only time I've ever had really warm feet in snow and freezing is with my muklucks. The Eskimo knows what they're doing with that, you know.
There's a house on a hill by a worn down weathered old mill in the valley below where the river winds. No such thing as bad times in a soft, southern flame. Oh, Cotton Jenny's her name. She wakes me up when the sun goes down and the wheel of love goes round. Wheels of love go round. Love go round. Love go round. A joyful. She waits by the door. Oh, Cotton Jenny, I'm sore. And she rubs my feet while the sun goes down. And the wheel of love goes round. Wheels of love go round.
Cotton Ginny. Well, here again, Levi Lott interviewing Laura Legere. Levi asked her about the problem of bilingual education.
There is a instructor at Kuskokwim Community College who is dealing with this problem right now, and he has had English as a second language training. His name is Tom Layton, and he is offering a several courses in English. And one of the ones that he's going to be doing at Kuskokwim Community College that will be individualized on a college level that hopefully will help the students that are interested in working in the white man's world and running Alaska, which is what I think people are hoping to see, that the native in Alaskan case, that the native will handle the politics instead of the white man, you know, as they did in Arizona and everywhere else, is trying to get the college student up to a proficiency in English so that they can handle their own in whatever dealings they would have to do. And Tom Layton right now is trying to listen to individual problems that a person speaking English as a second language may have, and then he is developing individual packets of learning so that if a student has a particular problem, he can give them a certain body of material to go over to help them with their task. And once they complete his unit of learning, hopefully they will overcome or at least be aware of the particular English problem they may have. So he is developing many, many packets of learning units to help the English as a second language speaker. There are some problems in that area with sounds. Yupik speakers have a hard time saying some English sounds, as English speakers have a hard time saying Yupik sounds. And this is one of the major things he's working on at Kuskokwim Community College. One of the most common things that you hear with Yupik speakers generally, what Tom calls it is a marker of an English as a second language person, is it dropping of articles. In other words, I will go to store instead of I will go to the store, you know. And that's a very common thing that you hear.
Potlatch is produced in the studio of KUAC in College under Title I of the Higher Education Act.